Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason, coming to you this week from Bloomington, Illinois at the Interstate Center, where we wrapped up the Corn and Soybean Classic Series 5 programs across the state with the Extension specialists from Crop Production and Ag Economy on the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences campus at the University of Illinois. Our thanks to the many farmers and agribusinessmen, more than, I'd say close to 800 of them, that managed to make it out for those five sessions. We began in Rin Lake in southern Illinois, made our way to Springfield and Moline, Malta, and wrapped up in Bloomington, right here at the Interstate Center. On hand with us this afternoon, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC in Bloomington, Illinois, and also Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Gentlemen, let's start with this question. And I think it's probably important as we made our way across the state, one of the things that happened this week, and not so much in the marketplace, but that was announced by the Andersons and maybe followed through by other grain companies, is that they're going to change the way they manage to purchase grain in the future. Beginning in the September contract, I think, of 2009, they won't have any spot bids, roughly speaking. It will be just a basis, and you'll be able to bid, say, 40 under for the December contract or 40 under for delivery in 2009, but they won't have a bid that you're getting that from. You'll take whatever happens at that time. Tell me about that and what it means to the marketplace, please, and we'll start with you, Bill Mayer.
Well, I think that we all have to understand out here that regardless of whether it's a personal situation or a company situation, there's a limited amount of capital to put towards hedging commodities, especially when those commodities, it's not such a big issue when it's inventory in the bin, but when it's something that you're not going to be able to turn into cash for 18 months down the road, that's a situation that you have to look at. How do you best manage your capital? And I think that the market, if we get into a situation this summer where we have crop problems, I think we'll see more of this, and probably some situations where bids may not be out there for the 08 fall situation. And the farmers, producers, listeners here need to look out there to the future and kind of think about if we get into situations we don't take advantage of opportunities with price is going a lot higher. How do I do that if I can't get a local bid at my local elevator?
Dale Durkles, can you talk about that and the HTAs, because they'll stop using those at the Andersons and maybe some other elevators fairly soon?
You know what Bill said really hit it on the head, and what a lot of people need to understand in this environment right now, it's the line of credit issue for the commercial industry, whether it's the local elevator or all the way up to the big commercial like an Andersons or an ADM. They're getting an awful lot of money on the books borrowed to finance these operations, whether it's purchasing grain outright or whether it's trying to finance hedge positions on the Board of Trade at this point, and the speed of which the markets are moving, and also the level of prices we're at, is really behind a lot of this. So these people are pulling back and wanting to play a little bit more a conservative tack and see and try to get some sort of a feel for where this thing is headed. As much as some people might not like to hear me say that, I think probably a good hard break in the market would do to make everybody a little bit healthier in the commercial segment of the grain industry as far as looking at these lines of credits and the problems that it's causing.
Your thoughts and comments on the topic of HTAs and not being able to get a bid for the fall of 2009, Kurt?
Well, it's a risk management game, and we're putting that risk back into the producer's hands. So instead of the elevator carrying that or financing that, producers are going to have to come up with some ideas on doing their own hedging and financing their own positions. And we've been working on some creative strategies to help do that, because you're just not going to be able out there to go hedge it and just bear it, because it's going to be rough and brutal. And so you got to come up with some different strategies to give you comfort to withstand those $3, $4 moves in corn, and maybe $5, $10 moves in beans. And it's money management and risk management, and it's going to be a change in trend here.
You know, one thing I'd like to mention here, you know, a lot of people, and I've mentioned it long for probably a couple of years or more, how, you know, we were moving into an environment much like the 1970s maybe. And I think part of this may be what's going on, but the other thing, you know, when you mention these 09 positions and not being able to do anything other than a basis bid, I've basically told people, you know, I worry about the markets for maybe 12, 15, 18 months out in front of me. But if we take a lesson away from the 70s, that was, you know, about the maximum amount of time that we really had to worry about downside risk in the market. So I don't really get too anxious about the 09 crops, especially considering that, you know, here we are almost 2 years away from harvesting it. And so I got a window that's 30 months open yet, maybe 36 months to even think about marketing it. So I don't think those 09 bids really bother me all that much.
Kurt, I'd like you to follow up on some of the strategies in just a moment that you might employ to protect a producer and their income and the risk that they might have in this kind of marketing environment. But let's take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade. Very quickly, March wheat had a high this week of $9.66 and a low of $9.01. March wheat settled at $9.62.5, up 53.25. July wheat settled $8.78.5, up 72.5 for the week. March corn had a high of $4.98.25 and a low of $4.94.75, settled at $4.98.25, up 3.25. December futures at $5.15, finished 16 higher. So how is it that you might employ some risk management tools for producers that would be subjected to just a basis bid in the future?
Well, basis is going to fluctuate, and you got to lock in basis if it's attractive. Otherwise, instead of taking a hit on the basis, you can come in and hedge the board. Of course, every penny up, every penny down, you're going to make or lose with whatever the market gives you. Probably the simplest thing to do is to buy a put option. Right now, you can put in a $4 cash floor for next fall here. A year ago, if I'd said you could get $4, you'd been standing in line for 2 miles saying, well, how can I do that, and I'd want to do it. Now, here we are, and there are opportunities here. You can go relatively cheap, put in that $4 floor, and stay open on the cash. Then as the time goes on, maybe push the cash out the door. The other way is to go ahead and just sell the futures up here and maybe cover for call options so you don't get spooked out on margin calls. You can get creative. You can buy a put and sell a call, but you need to find some type of strategy that you're comfortable with and stick with it.
For producers that are listening to the program on the web and other areas that we do cover in the state of Illinois, they may not be familiar with the Andersons, which is what we've been talking about, very large company, grain company that covers a good portion of the eastern Corn Belt. I believe they're in Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, delivery points in Toledo, and they have one property, which is in Champaign County, and we talked to them as a cash grain segment on Monday afternoons. Do you think that this is likely to spread to other elevators and elevator companies? Will they be under just as heavy, and I don't know where they got pressure or why the decision was made. But
I'd like to just say that was something I was thinking as we were talking here. This really doesn't have any indication as far as the financial ability of a company. It actually is showing some forethinking from the Andersen standpoint, that they're looking ahead as to how to best manage the capital. And that's something that really needs to be said. The other thing is, I think that it just kind of goes to an overall, stressing the infrastructure that we have here by going in this. You know, we've increased our corn crop from 10 billion bushels a few years ago to, you know, over 13 billion bushels this year. And we also need to spend money on additional storage. A meeting I was at not too long ago talked about the state of Illinois needs to spend $700 million in additional storage between now and 2010. So all that enters into the picture, you know, additional capital needed there. So I think it's just it's a stress on the infrastructure, handling it at harvest time, hedging it. You know, the whole thing's going to have some stress, and it's to be expected when we increase our bushels like we have.
Yeah, they're managing risk. I don't think I meant to say anything that the Andersons would be under any financial duress, because they're not. It was simply a risk management tool that they decided to employ, and I suppose that farmers will have to bear some portion of the brunt of, but farmers are bearing the brunt of what's been happening in the terms of convergence in the market for a while, and maybe we can talk a little bit about wheat and how it managed to make its way through that process. Wheat convergence wasn't very good more than a year ago, but now seems to have worked through the process, and the cash and the futures bids have come to convergence as they go through the delivery process. Corn and soybeans have not made that transition at this point.
You want to remember one thing about wheat. Wheat is a little bit of a different animal when you get into the delivery process, because I can still do physical delivery in a facility up on the Great Lakes at this point. So, you know, when you look at those points, you do actually have convergence in the process. But when you look at corn and soybeans, where you're, you know, issuing a certificate to deliver on a barge, you got another issue in play here, and I think there's still some real problems with the basic delivery process of trying to deliver grain on the Illinois River via a certificate to deliver it on a barge itself. And you know, the small guy is having a real hard time trying to transact that, and you know, it's created a lot of problems with convergence between cash and futures. Another thing we got to keep in mind here, you know, we have $13 beans. We have $5 corn on the board. And a natural evolution is that basis has an inverse function to the futures market, especially when you go to these kinds of levels, because when you get to extraordinarily high prices, what happens? Farmer sells more willingly, end user doesn't buy very willingly, thereby basis gets wider. When you find we go back to low price levels, farmer doesn't sell as willingly, end users wanting to buy more aggressively, basis comes together. So part of this basis game up in here continuing to widen out right now really is a direct reflection of where we are in the futures market and the overall price structure.
That may be the case, but we should still get convergence and not have a 40 or 50 or 60 spread once we get to deliveries on the river or wherever that happens to take place, and the futures and the cash market should come together within 2 to 3 cents. That would be what people would consider normal and what is supposed to happen.
Like I said, there is a problem with the delivery mechanism for corn and beans on the Illinois River, and I think everybody acknowledges that, and how to deal with it is something that nobody has a good answer for yet.
Kurt, you have a good answer for it?
Well, I'll tell you right up front, it's not designed for the farmer. I mean, if it was, the farmer would be taking advantage of it. Because there's huge opportunity with a wide basis. The farmer would do it if he could, but it's not set up that way. It's the bottom line.
So how do they look at the futures market at this point, and what do they do, especially if they're used to delivering to the river, I suppose? What do they do to protect the basis risk that they might have on deliveries, or do they need to do anything? Are they just flat pricing? How do you expect them to deal with this?
Well, that's the art of marketing, and that's why we're in the business. And you got to work with guys one-on-one. And there's times to flat price, there's times to hedge, and there's times to lock in that basis. And right now, if you do get some strength in here in basis, that is, you probably need to lock that in, because basis is probably only going to get wider as the volatility stays strong. We probably see basis firming up this fall once we get into harvest once again. So you got to look at these seasonalities, and you got to look at what the marketings are for you and what can happen.
And just to follow up on what Kurt said there, I think he's exactly right. The time to sell futures and the time to lock in basis isn't always necessarily at the same time. So you almost need to look at the basis portion of your cash contract as one marketing decision, and the flat price or the futures price part of it as a second. And I would agree totally with what Kurt said before. We're in a heck of an opportunity right now that we can lock in some tremendous floor prices, still be open in case the price goes up, and you know, go that route and do it. And if you think the basis is good, lock that in as a separate contract out here.
Tell me about the volatility at the Chicago Board of Trade. I was on the road reading numbers all week at the Corn and Soybean Classic Series, but one day up and up large, and one day down and down large. What was the volatility about? What was happening during the week?
Well, I thought this week, and these guys may not agree with me, but I thought we kind of, for the first weekend in about 6 or 8 weeks, we've really picked up the volatility and the choppiness. We're up and down, up and down. Where the past 6 weeks or so, we've kind of opened higher and it'll make a run up, and it just kind of settles down and stays at higher for most of the day. So to me, I think that's something that's kind of a sign that we could be stalling out a little bit, because we've got this choppiness. It seemed like it was a lot easier to test the lows this week than it has been.
I'd concur with what Bill says. I think there's something in the way of the performance this week that kind of raises a red flag. It says, you know, you got to be a little bit more careful. We've been on a sustained move up. It's been real orderly, amazingly enough, at these price levels. But when you look at the board itself right now, you got to think about these people, you know, and you look at the outside markets. Energy has been a softer tone in here. The stock market has had more of a weakening underlying action here at this point. And I think there's probably some degree of nervousness, you know. And I mean, when you look around, you got to remember this outside investment money, they're long around 1.8, 1.9 billion bushel of corn. They're long just short of a billion bushel of beans. And, you know, there's some nervousness out there. If the outside markets start to change direction compared to what we've seen, are these people going to start taking money out of the market? And, you know, that's big money if it starts to come out. And so I think there's nervousness that we may not be able to sustain these gains.
When we come back, we'll talk about the soybean market. You're listening to Commodity Week on WILL AM 580.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. It was a return to winter for most of Illinois this week after a brief encounter with spring-like weather early this month. Temperatures this week ranged from near to slightly below normal in southern Illinois to near normal in the northern part of the state. A couple of colder than normal days early in the week were followed by milder weather ahead of a cold front headed for Illinois. The cold front came through on Thursday, marking the start of a rapid plunge in temperatures as Arctic air began to make its way south out of Canada. Other than a few snow flurries early in the week, there was little significant precipitation in Illinois until late Wednesday and early Thursday, when an area of snow developed ahead of the advancing cold front. Several inches of snow fell in western and northwestern Illinois, as well as adjacent portions of Iowa. To the southeast of this area of snow, some light snow and snow mixed with rain was scattered across central and southern Illinois. After a couple of days of Arctic cold this weekend, temperatures will moderate slightly on Monday, but that warming will likely be accompanied by some snow across northern and central Illinois. That snow will be followed by a reinforcing shot of cold air that will keep temperatures well below normal all next week. A weather system moving through the northern part of the Gulf states could brush the southern half of Illinois with some snow late Wednesday or Thursday, but otherwise the week should be mostly dry. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us this afternoon at the Interstate Center in Bloomington, Illinois, are Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, and Dale Dirkholz of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois. We're taking a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural markets after spending the week on the road with the Corn and Soybean Classic Series. And our thanks to the guest in studio, well, in the Interstate Center with us this afternoon for taking time out to join me here. This was our last date for the Corn and Soybean Classic Series. It was an excellent series. Once again, thanks to everybody who managed to make it out for those five programs across the state of Illinois. And to the crop scientists from the University of Illinois and the ag economist, including Gary Schnitke and Daryl Good, for joining us. Taking a look now, speaking of economies, let's take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade. In the bean market for the week, March was a new lead option and had a high this week of 1441.5, a low of $12.45. March beans settled at 1264. It was down 22 cents for the week. November beans settled at 1255.25, and it was up $10.25 for the week. That can't be a right number. That has to be 1241.5 for the number on the high side. What do you have out for a high there for the week, Bill? I've got just the wrong number. I've got a 1245 low and a high of, do you know?
Which month are you looking
at? I'm looking at the March, and it would be the lead option. Well, don't worry about it. We'll get through it. So anyway, I bet the change is right, which was down 22 cents. November beans settled at $12.55 and a quarter, and it ended up 10 and a quarter higher for the week. Tell me about the bean market and what you see in it at this point, how farmers view the market, whether they're making crop and planting decisions yet, what really is fundamentally driving the market, if anything, or whether it's just the index funds that are moving that marketplace.
Money's driving the market, purely money. It's turned into very much a money game in my own eyes at this particular juncture in time. You know, and you step back a minute and you look at the beans and you ask about farmers and their decisions. As we've been out on the road over the course of the last month and talking to producers about, you know, what planting intentions are, it's interesting. You know, we're finding not a lot of change from what they did last year, maybe a few more beans because of rotation. But when you look at the economics of the game, you know, for people that have decent soil, it says plant corn. You know, even at high input costs, there's still a lot more return over variable costs for corn and beans. And if that doesn't change, if these price ratios between new corn and new beans don't change, I think it's probably still going to be plant corn come spring.
You agree? Is it going to be plant corn? Are the guys going to put the corn planter down and just leave it there?
Well, it varies a lot from location to location. I mean, man, one meeting you go to, they're heavier corn. The next meeting, they're heavier beans. And third meeting, they don't know what to do. But overall, the trend is a little less corn and a few more beans, especially in the southern regions. The chance to double crop is going to be huge. Why not try to double crop beans when they're at $13? It could be 110 degrees out, and they'll still, you know, give it a try. So Informa came out. They went with, you know, a little less corn, a few more beans, but we'll fine-tune this as we go. But the interesting thing about the beans is all of a sudden, we're like Dale said, the investment money's coming in. They did their math. They finally did the math, looked at the supply-demand balance sheet, the same thing we've been talking about for 6 months. If we don't have more bean acres, it could be tight next year.
Do you think beans will be able to move up over the next several months? I can't imagine with corn that's pushing in the $4 to $5 range, beans that have made $13 at some point could really make much of a drive higher, but I suppose that might happen.
Yeah, I guess I think that we may have to have a correction here before we can go back up and make some higher prices, but certainly there's anything can happen in this market, and if you go back to the wheat market of a year ago and look at the amount that wheat went over its all-time highs, I think that you're not paying attention if you really don't think that beans could do the same thing under the right situation. Once we get into the growing season, they can make a run well above our all-time highs, which they've already, you know, surpassed them, but I mean a 30% over or something like that. Now, I'm not predicting that necessarily, but I think that what I've been telling customers is you have to respect this market. You have to respect what this market is capable of, especially if we get into some kind of crop problems this summer.
CFTC has been considering raising the spec limits. Will that change things very much?
I think it always adds to the volatility whenever you increase spec limits. At this juncture in the game, I'm not sure that's a huge deal.
And on top of that, the CME is the CME group, I guess I should say, they've put out a proposal here at this particular juncture in time that maybe they ought to raise the trading limits for corn and beans and wheat. And they were talking about, and it's a questionnaire, it's not certain yet, but should we go from 20 cents to 35 cent limit on corn? Should we go from 50 cent limit on beans to maybe 85? You know, and I mean, you're getting some numbers out here that only add to the volatility. But when you step back from this game, you know, and Bill was talking about beans and on into the summer, I don't think a lot of people really appreciate, you know, we're looking down a period here where we have huge amounts of uncertainty. And I'm saying bullish uncertainty and bearish uncertainty. You know, we just have a lot of things that are not easy to quantify. The only time I can really step back to and really find anything similar is 1973. Not saying markets are going to repeat it, but we have that same kind of uncertainty to deal with here.
How nervous do you think a farmer is, and how nervous do you think they should be, and what would ease their minds, in your opinion?
I don't know if they're nervous. They're just uncertain or not for sure what the future brings. We got to remember, we've been dreaming about this for the last 30 years, and we've been wanting volatility. We've been wanting these funds to come in and just drive this stuff sky high so we can sell. But the problem is, the fear is that we sell it too soon and not be able to market at some higher levels. So I think it's down to a marketing plan and being able to ride out the storms. I think you got to remember, you got to sell the rallies and buy the breaks.
So how do you set up a marketing plan on this one? It seems to me that you have to set it up on an income per acre probably, but then you have to look and try to figure out what your cash rent or what your input costs are going to be, not this year but the following year, so that you can have enough income to weather what could be a bad year the following year if it should break. Is that right?
Well, yeah, because you're going to have the extremes. I mean, the pendulum is going to swing sharply one way and back the other. Before you talk $3 corn, they said, man, that $3 corn is great. But you talk $3 corn now and said, boy, we can't have that. So you're correct. We got to, you know, let our profits run. And like we mentioned before, the simplest way is do a minimum price through a put. That way you've got a floor in. You know where you're at. If the market crashes, you're locked in there. But yet it leaves your upside open so you can still sell cash higher. And you don't have to worry about delivering actual bushels to vendors. So there's some creative ideas to get through the storm in here. It's just a matter of sitting down and working with somebody and doing something you're comfortable with, not what your neighbor's doing.
You know, what he says is right. There are a lot of things that you can do out here. Buying simple puts are one thing. The put-call strategy is another. You know, outright hedges, a lot of farmers are going to be nervous with that with the kind of volatility we have in here. But, you know, when you step back for a minute, $5 December corn, $13 November beans. Forget the basis. You can't make money? Better quit farming. You know, and I think sometimes you need to step back and look at things in a black and white sense and go, you know, that's really a darn good price. And I'm talking the new crop at this point, forgetting about 09. You know, and it says, you know, I don't necessarily, even on a simplistic sense, just a cash sale. You don't want to pass these opportunities up. You don't want to let greed get in front of your face because it can sting you and sting you bad.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that, a simple way to start on a plan is to decide how many bushels you're willing to sell between now and pollination time and how many periods you want to look at as far as making those sales and kind of get your plan out there. You know, I want to make sales under these circumstances and lay that out. And then going back to the puts, those bushels that you're not willing to sell, look at how you're going to get those covered, whether you're going to come in here and get it all done now or get some done now and some try to do some at higher prices. So I think, you know, just in a way, the higher prices, as Dale said, can make the plan a simpler plan than what you'd have in years where you don't have the ability to lock in a profit.
And now a final word from our panelists. Kurt Kimmel will start with you.
It's just going to be interesting. I mean, like I said, we've dreamt about this, and here it is. It's kind of scary, but it's kind of a blessing. And I think, like we've been saying here, have some type of plan and try to stick to it.
Dale Dirkholz?
Manage your risk. Be really proactive about it now. I don't think people really understand the kind of short-term risk they have in this game at this point. Not that we're going to fall to disastrous levels, but we can take a huge chunk out of the market real quick in this game right now, and I don't think people realize that.
And Bill Mayer?
I would agree with that, and I think that you just have to keep the ball in front of you. The worst thing you can do right now is to not be paying attention and keep your eye on the ball and make sure that you're aware of what's going on as you go through the next 6 weeks here.
Our thanks to Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, Dale Dirkholz of AgriVisor LLC from Bloomington, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. And that is this week's edition of Commodity Week, coming to you on tape from the Interstate Center in Bloomington, Illinois. You can listen to Commodity Week online if you'd like to after the fact. The address is www.willag.org. That's willag.org. Have a good week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids. Funding agricultural programming is an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialist.